1995, the woman who saved baseball. Strike three. The game. Milwaukee Brewers 7, Baltimore Orioles nothing. At Oriole Park at Camden Yards in Baltimore. Attendance, 46,523. On Monday, May 1st, 1995. The weather, 60s and breezy. Hall of Famers, Orioles shortstop Cal Ripken Jr., pitcher Mike Mussina, and DH Harold Baines. Game highlights. The Orioles' bats on this day made Milwaukee starter Ricky Bones look like a Cy Young Award candidate. He wasn't. The right-hander gave up only two hits in 7 1/3 innings. On the opposite side, Orioles ace Mike Mussina, who actually was a perennial Cy Young candidate, got roughed up during his team's home opener, giving up 9 hits and 5 earned runs in just 4 innings. To me, I'm halfway through spring training, the future Hall of Famer told Mark Maskey of the Washington Post, describing the effect of the strike-delayed start on the 1995 season. It's going to be spotty for a while until we get into the season. I'll come around. The late March decision to end the strike resulted in a shortened preseason, a late start to the regular season, and many players being off-kilter. The 26-year-old Mussina did come around, finishing 6th in the 1995 AL Cy Young voting. The Brewers collected 3 home runs this day, none off 32-year-old Jamie Moyer, who took over for Mussina in the 5th and stayed for 2 1/3 innings. Over 25 seasons playing for 8 different teams, Moyer would give up 522 homers, more than any other pitcher. His dubious record is unlikely to ever be broken. No active pitcher is within 200 home runs of his all-time record. The story. For the third, and maybe final, time, opening day was delayed due to a work stoppage. Who ended it? Many say it was an underestimated Yankees fan. On May 26, 2009, President Barack Obama read seriously and proudly the long list of accomplishments of Judge Sonia Sotomayor, his nominee to replace retiring Supreme Court Associate Justice David Souter. High on Obama's list was something she'd done 14 years earlier. During her tenure on the district court, she presided over roughly 450 cases, Obama said plainly. As he continued, a smile came over his face. One case in particular involved a matter of enormous concern to many Americans, including me, the baseball strike of 1994-95. In a decision that reportedly took her just 15 minutes to announce, a swiftness much appreciated by baseball fans everywhere, she issued an injunction that helped end the strike. Some say that Judge Sotomayor saved baseball. Of all the accomplishments recited that day in the White House, this was the only one that garnered its own round of applause. While the president's proclamation might have been a slight exaggeration, it would be correct to say the then 40-year-old Sotomayor, the youngest judge in the Southern District of New York back in 1995, who grew up in the Bronx, just 3 miles from Yankee Stadium, did more in a quarter hour to end baseball's latest and most devastating work stoppage than had been accomplished by the players, owners, President Clinton, or Congress in more than a year. Baseball's journey to her courtroom was long and painful. For the first half of 1994, the owners and players traded proposals aimed at reaching a new collective bargaining agreement. The owners were trying to solve their own business difficulties and lack of self-control by advancing concepts like revenue sharing and salary caps while eliminating salary arbitration. This was playing out in an already toxic environment in which the players had won case after case, proving the owners had colluded to suppress and limit free agent signings in recent years. After the games of August 11, 1994, the players went on strike and did not return. For the first time in U.S. professional sports history, the entire postseason was canceled and no champion was crowned. As the calendar flipped to 1995, the owners unilaterally reimposed the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, which had expired more than a year earlier, but added a nuance unprecedented in the history of baseball. they would prepare to play the 1995 season with replacement players, something the National Football League had done for three disastrous weeks during their strike-shortened 1987 season. "We are committed to playing the 1995 season," proclaimed acting commissioner and Milwaukee Brewers owner Bud Selig, "and we'll do so with the best players willing to play." The parties were summoned to the White House in February by President Clinton for what turned into a lengthy, fruitless session with a federal mediator. At a late-night press conference, the president admitted, "Clearly, they are not capable of resolving this strike without an umpire." He asked Congress to step in, but Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole and House Speaker Newt Gingrich issued a joint statement saying Congress was, quote, "ill-suited to resolving private labor disputes," unquote. Enter Judge Sotomayor. As replacement players were training in Florida and Arizona, the players sued the owners in federal court. Some chauvinistic members of the owners' legal team were pleased when they learned the case would be heard by a female judge. They were in for a rude awakening. The Associated Press summarized her approach. Quote, "She used puns and waxed poetic. She confessed she was a fan, and then with stern language and a piercing glare, she issued a ruling that might finally bring back baseball. If anyone doubted the importance of events in her Manhattan courtroom, she erased them quickly and with a rather unique opening. I can't help but to at least borrow some analogies from baseball as I start. The often leisurely game of baseball is filled with many small moments which catch a fan's breath. There is, for example, that wonderful second when you see an outfielder backpedaling and jumping up to the wall, and time stops for an instant as he jumps up, and you finally figure out if it's a home run, a double, or a single off the wall, or an out." Then she got to the heart of the matter, demonstrating with only 4 days preparation time a detailed grasp of how the business of baseball works. "This strike has captivated the public's attention," she said. "Given the popularity of the sport, it appears that any delay on my part would halt the continuation of the negotiating process." She told lawyers for striking players and the owners that they could salvage the 1995 season and use the progress as a catalyst to reach a new labor agreement. Then she scolded the owners' lawyers, staring as she said the possibility of an agreement will be greatly diminished if this season is lost because of the unfair labor practices of the owners. "I hope that none of you assumed that my lack of knowledge of any of the intimate details of your dispute meant that I was not a baseball fan," she said. "You can't grow up in the Bronx without knowing about baseball, particularly from a family where their claim to fame is that every member of it has a different team that they have rooted for." Lawyers for the owners had underestimated the situation. After her opening remarks, even before they presented their case, they knew this day was not going to end well for them. In her 2.5 years on the bench, reported James McKinley in the next day's New York Times, United States District Court Judge Sonia Sotomayor has earned a reputation as a sharp, outspoken, and fearless jurist, someone who does not let powerful interests bully, rush, or cow her into a decision. She lived up to that billing yesterday morning when the fate of Major League Baseball was thrust upon her. After a 2-hour hearing in which she grilled both sides on the fine points of labor law, she took only 15 minutes to issue an injunction that could break the deadlock in the baseball strike. Her preliminary injunction ordered the owners to restore free agency and arbitration and prohibited the use of replacement players. Days later, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals upheld her ruling. With no other way to play the 1995 season, the owners had no choice but to relent. The again empowered players returned to work while a new collective bargaining agreement was hammered out. 14 years later, at the time of her Supreme Court nomination, Time magazine looked back on her historic ruling. Judge Sotomayor told Time's Sean Gregory, "The owners misunderstood the case law and many of their arguments were inconsistent. One side can't come up with new rules unless they negotiate it with the other. A few sports columnists, Gregory continued, offended by the speed with which she reached her decision, offered odd indictments of Sotomayor.
"I'm sorry she's not male, so I could say what I really think," wrote 76-year-old Furman Bisher of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. "I haven't the time or disposition to deal with NOW, the National Organization for Women, right now."
Gregory continued, "However, the legal community, for the most part, still has high praise for her judgment." "It was the correct ruling," says Rick Karcher, sports professor at the Florida Coastal School of Law. "She assured that fair collective bargaining would take place under the labor laws." The only other significant pro-labor figure involved in the delayed opening day 1995 was, ironically, one of baseball's owners, a relative newcomer to baseball ownership, Baltimore's managing general partner Peter Angelos. When the owners, led by Selig, voted overwhelmingly to proceed with replacement players, Angelos and other members of the Orioles ownership group, like author Tom Clancy, boldly refused. Their stance won high praise from players and labor-friendly fans. The contrast of experiences across the country on opening day was notable. In cities like New York, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and elsewhere, unforgiving fans booed the home team, staged protests, and angrily threw dollar bills at players. Large numbers showed their disgust by simply staying home. In Baltimore, however, Camden Yards was sold out once again, as it had been for almost every game for the prior three seasons. And while fans' retaliation led to a 20% drop in attendance across the country, Oriole Park stayed generally full for the next 4 years. Angelos invited the owner of that day's opponent, the Milwaukee Brewers, to attend opening day in person. Bud Selig respectfully declined. For the box score, play-by-play, and more, visit openingday5050.com.